And welcome back to Coast. We're going to come back in a moment and talk more with Jack Goldsmith about his work in Hoffa's shadow and also take your calls this hour right here on Coast to Coast AM. George Norrie back with you along with Jack Goldsmith. And Jack, where do people get your book in Hoffa's shadow? Can they get it at Amazon and all over the place?
Yes, of course. It's available everywhere on Amazon, in bookstores, Borders, Indy, any place you can buy books, you can find it.
I'm in the city now where Jimmy Hoffa's attorney, Morris Schenker, resided. And he, of course, was always involved in the Teamster Pension Fund as well. May have been the focal, but the middle guy between Hoffa and the mob to get the investments going in the pension fund. You write a little bit about him. What do you think of Morris Schenker? He's dead now, of course.
Yeah. So he was Hoffa's lawyer for a long time and also, as you say, kind of a confidant and businessman. I do think he was, I do think that he was involved as a middleman between Hoffa and some of the pension loans. But he was also, involved in getting Hoffa out of prison, and he was his attorney for a long time.
Yeah, he sure was. But he was involved with a lot of things in St. Louis as well, with the former mayor and who's passed on and everything else. There always were accusations that, you know, he was involved with his hand in the cookie jar.
So I read a lot of books about this. I read a lot that said that. I couldn't independently confirm it, and I didn't really press it because it wasn't relevant to my tale. He was relevant to some of the things involving Hoffa, but certainly a lot of stories say that.
In your opinion, let's look at the broader scope here, and then we'll go to calls because they're lining up for you like crazy here, Jack. Why did Jimmy decide he wanted to come back into the union? Why didn't he just take his parole, he had money, and just go away?
Yeah, that's a great question. So not only did he have a lot of money, Chucky speculates in the tens of millions, the mob offered him anything he wanted just to stay out and stay quiet. But for Hoffa, his whole life was that union. And he thought it was snatched from him unfairly when he had to go to prison.
Mm-hmm.
He remained the president of the union for most of the time in prison. He continued to try to run the union. When he got out, and he basically thought that Simmons had double-crossed him, he thought that Nixon had double-crossed him, he was absolutely beside himself, really. I think he became irrational. And he wanted only one thing in his life, to get that union back. And he was going to get it back at all costs, where he was going to bring everybody down with him. That's just the way he was acting at the end.
He didn't know, I'm told, that the condition of part of the parole was no more union involvement. I don't think he knew that.
I don't believe that. I don't think that's true. One of the things I try to do in the book is to examine that claim. He certainly claimed he didn't know.
Right.
I marshal a whole bunch of evidence that suggests that he did know, in fact. And I actually quote Chucky as saying, you know, when Chucky knew about all of this stuff, and Chucky told me what Hoffa was thinking, and Chucky says he did know, but he thought, I need to get out. I'll basically accept that condition, and when I can get out, I'll try to work a way to get out of it. And that's the way Hoffa thought, pragmatic, one step at a time.
He always let his wife know where he was going to be, and I think on that fateful day in July of 1975, when he didn't call her after he disappeared, they knew something was wrong.
Yeah, when he didn't come home that night, he actually did call her earlier in the afternoon to complain that the people he was supposed to meet had not shown up. But he was supposed to be home by 4 o'clock. He didn't come home by 4. He didn't come home that evening. By the time, by about 8 or 9 o'clock at night, Josephine was panicked, because she knew something was wrong. He never would have gone that long without getting in touch.
Bobby Kennedy was assassinated in 1968. Hoffa disappeared in 75. Hoffa hated Bobby Kennedy. Do you think he might have been involved in that?
In the
68? Yes.
It would have been difficult. He was in prison at the time, and I found no evidence or even charge that he was involved in knocking off Bobby. He certainly hated Bobby with a passion.
With a passion. Let's go to the calls. Let's pick it up here. And if there's any Teamster drivers out there and you want to check in with us, give us a call as well. Fort Wayne, Indiana, Rick's with us. Rick, get us started. Go ahead.
Yeah. My father was Teamsters in the early 60s, second generation, started in 78, retired. Mm-hmm. We, by the way, George, I did meet you in Columbus, Ohio.
Yes.
I'm the guy that bought the shirt and had you all sign it.
That's right. I remember that.
And you had some of the 135 down there that you knew, and I'm from 114. It was the local that I retired in.
Mm-hmm.
But the rumor is with Hoffa, I did meet his son in 97 when he was running. And he got in because of his name, because everybody was sick of how it was going, and we thought. And this is everybody. I was from a barn that had about 3,500 guys in it, but 26,000 nationwide.
Yeah.
And we thought he was going to be like his dad, you know, come back, let's turn it around. And if we have to be tough, we'll be tough. I know they started their deregulation because of Hoffa. Because of the big strike that they had and people were getting hurt. I think it lasted 3 days, and it put the country 6 months behind, if I'm not mistaken. People were putting on their trucks, go home. You know, I'm just going home, the owner-operators, you know, but and stuff like that. The rumor is that when Hoffa become missing, that the reason why they won't find him until the Sears Towers fall, because the rumor is that's where he's at. He's at the bottom of the Sears Tower in Chicago. Don't know anything like that, so I don't need no FBI guys coming around.
Knocking on your door. Well, you know what? I've heard so many rumors, Jack, that his remains are everywhere. I mean, in a stadium in New Jersey, in a highway in Detroit. I mean, stories were endless. Yeah,
they were endless. They were endless and endless. I have a couple of paragraphs in the book that talk about some of that. I mean, they were endless number of fields. As you were alluding to earlier, there have been over a dozen digs since 1975, looking in barns and farms and pools. They were dozens of different rumors about what happened to him, including the fact that he disappeared himself. Endless rumors, but in fact, no evidence, not a single bit of evidence for where he is.
Let's go to Phyllis in Aurora, Colorado. Welcome to the program. Hi, Phyllis.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. I'm an old lady, and I remember when my dad and my uncles was trying to bring a union into the packing houses in Indianapolis. And I recall them coming in, and Hoffa was their hero, I'm telling you. And I think whatever mischief he got into later, he did so much good. Because I worked for unions, and anybody, and I was so upset when they put a man on the Supreme Court that had voted down a union for the packing house workers, because that's what my uncles and my dad did. So at any rate, they come home, I'll be quick here, and they would be so exhausted that they'd fall on the couch and be asleep before they hit the couch. And they fought with slingshots, they fought with everything they had, and it was absolutely, he was a hero. And I've always worked for unions in my life, because I retired from the phone company, which is sure far cry. But the sons and some of the daughters of these people that had so little and fought and worked at these horrible packing houses, their children are all attorneys. And so they have just all a bunch of Irish people from Irish Hill in Indianapolis. So, but Hoffa did far more good than he did harm, in my opinion. And that's what I got to say.
Thank you. A lot of people will probably believe that, Jack.
There's no doubt that, as the caller said, Hoffa was so revered by workers, especially Teamsters. And they basically, I have a couple of quotes like this in the book, and they're endless. Some people said, I know, so what if Jimmy's getting some on the side, because he's taking care of me and he's taking care of us and he's one of us and he's using the money he's getting on the side to help us. And that was all true to a large extent. And there's no doubt that I try to emphasize this in the book, his accomplishments as a labor leader were extraordinary, and they've been underappreciated, I think, because they've been overshadowed by the dark side of Hoffa, which led to his undoing.
And I got to tell you, Jack, this is another interesting story. I knew a couple of the principals who were part of the ownership of the Aladdin Hotel in Las Vegas. that borrowed money from the Teamsters pension fund, and they told me, one is since dead, but they told me, and this may be the God's truth for all of the things, they said, even though everybody knew that the Teamster money built Vegas, and a lot of it through the mob, they never lost money for the pension fund. They made money and made a lot of it. What do you think of that?
So I never was able to figure that out. That was certainly Chucky's view, and I do think that that the loans were almost all, if not all, repaid, certainly at a rate the same as banks. I never found anything to contradict that. The charge about Hoffa was that he was making a lot of money on the side. He got money up front. He had points on the loans. So there was a lot of money turning around, and a lot of people were making a lot of money.
And they were borrowing money to people who would never get a loan again. They wouldn't be able to finance a casino in Vegas.
Yeah, exactly. Chucky has, I can't recall it right now, but he has a hilarious description about the sophisticated white-shirted bankers who wouldn't give these people a loan, so they had to come to Hoffa, who was happy to give them a loan. And let me say, Hoffa was proud of his investments. When he went out to Vegas, he went out there. He didn't give a damn about the gambling and the drinking and the carousing, but he got out there and got on his hands and knees and helped the workers build the buildings, the teams who were building the buildings. He was very, very proud of it.
He was. And again, like these principals told me, they said the Teamster Pension Fund did not lose any money in their Vegas investments.
I wouldn't be surprised to hear that. I mean, I've never seen anything to the contrary. But just to be clear, there was a lot of money from those investments going in a lot of different places. But I think the Teamsters were paid back for it.
Let's go to Mike in Cleveland.
There's a lot of cash going around.
God, lots. Mike in Cleveland, Ohio. Go ahead, Michael.
Good morning, George. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Good morning, Jack.
Good morning.
You know, sometimes you hear certain things going around a kitchen table, and a friend of mine said that one of his family members had something to do with Jimmy. I know you hear a lot of different things, but I did my research, and I came across a photo in the South Bend newspaper of Jimmy Hoffa and a top executive at GM standing next to each other. And he also worked for the Central Intelligence Agency. And he was in the room when Hoffa got killed.
Really?
And when I saw that picture on that server, George, and then I looked at it like 3 weeks later to find it again, it was gone.
Gone.
So I could give you the name, but Tom's got my number, Jack, and you can call me and do the research. Because I kind of just shied away from all that, but that was a story that he was going to tell everything, and he knew everything about Kennedy, the CIA, everything. And I think the enticement to work with the UAW was enough to get him in the car. Maybe he was going to walk away from the Teamsters, but I think somebody enticed him that said, hey, why don't you build the UAW up strong with the Teamsters, and that enticed him to get in the car.
Well, that would have been intriguing to him, Jack, wouldn't it, to run the UAW?
I mean, he would have liked to have gotten back involved in the labor movement in any way he can, I think, but he was barred from all union activity. But I have to say, his heart was on the Teamsters. That's what his focus was. I don't believe he was focused on other unions. And frankly, I mean, the Teamsters had been basically the AFL and CIO had kicked out the Teamsters in 57 when Hoffa was named president. So even after he got out of prison, he wasn't on great relations with them.
How was he going to overcome that proviso about being barred from union activity as part of his parole?
He had no way. He had no way. He had a lawsuit, and his last desperate act when he tried to, he spent a lot of money and threw around a lot of power trying to get rid of that condition, and he couldn't do it. So he brought a lawsuit. Shanker wouldn't bring the lawsuit, actually, so he got another lawyer to do it. The lawsuit was trying to get the condition listed as being unconstitutional. He lost in the trial court. The Court of Appeals case was pending when he disappeared. Hoffa was spreading rumors. This is also one of the things that got him killed. He was spreading rumors. They're false. I tracked this down. But he was spreading rumors that the Court of Appeals was going to rule for him, or that the Attorney General Edward Levy was going to declare the pardon unconstitutional. So he was spreading rumors that the condition was going to be lifted, but it wasn't going to be. He had no way to get around it, and that's why When he figured that out, I think is when he started acting really irrationally.
Let's go to Dumont, New Jersey. Greg's with us. Welcome to the program, Greg. Go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. Jimmy Hoffa is a hero. I'm a union member in my early 60s. All I can say is, well, first of all, we lost Walter Reuther a few years before.
Yep. In that plane crash.
In a mysterious plane crash.
Yes.
I have to ask your guest, considering what happened in 1981, when basically a puppet actor who was our president, who basically ran, you know, was a puppet of the Fortune 100, when he fired the air traffic controllers, a lot of people I know in various unions think at that point that was the beginning of the end of the union movement and also the New Deal in our country. And if we had held our ground at that point, I was a college student at that point, but if we had held our ground, the Teamsters, if it was led by a brilliant strategist like Mr. Hoffa or Mr. Reuther, and we fought back at that time, think of the consequences if the pushback had happened at that point for our country in general and for working people.
Interesting observation. The unions were the backbone of building the American middle class and workforce during those days, Jack. Where do you think they stand today? I mean, we just saw this month-long UAW strike with General Motors. I think it's coming to an end now if they ratify. But
they're in terrible shape. They're in terrible shape for a whole bunch of reasons.
All of them are.
All of them are. And there are a whole bunch of reasons for it, and it actually started long before 1981. It started in the late 50s with the McClellan Committee, which Bobby Kennedy painted labor much. The clip that you ran is indicative. Hoffa had many sins, but Kennedy painted a picture that he was much more simple even than he was, and he tarred all the labor movement with it. And then labor grew too bureaucratic and sclerotic. Foreign competition came in. The government cracked down on all sorts of labor tactics. And then, of course, as someone else mentioned earlier, deregulation happened starting in the 70s. That's what really hurt the Teamsters, because when deregulation comes into play, they no longer can basically enforce the union rules as forcefully as they could. And then, of course, Reagan did, in firing the strikers. That was a big blow to unions. But there's so many reasons why unions have declined since the late 50s in this country. It's hard to pinpoint just one.
How come we knew everything about the Teamsters pension fund in those days and that they were investing in Vegas, and today we don't know one investment that they've invested in?
We do know one thing. The Teamsters pension fund is much depleted. My understanding, and I haven't studied this thoroughly, but my understanding is that they're not going to be able to pay many of the pensions. To the workers that they promised. Many people have had, and the Teamsters, I believe, have had their pensions cut.
Oh, my God. What happened to it?
I just think that, again, I'm not an expert on this, but I just think that a combination of poor investments, there were allegations that, of course, when the government took over the Teamsters for a while, they changed the investments, and that didn't go very well for a while. And just the dues have not been, because the membership has not stayed up, the dues have not come in, the investments have been poor. So it's just definitely not the union it was in the 50s and 60s, unfortunately.
When Hoffa disappeared in 75, you were just a youngster, but did you comprehend what was happening?
Barely. I mean, it was bedlam in my life. And my new stepfather, whom I loved, was on the front page of every paper being accused of murdering someone. That was very weird. My mom had mental health issues, and she was not doing well. The reporters were all over us all the time, and Chucky was being harassed everywhere he went. So I definitely knew something was going on.
Yeah, stay with us, Jack. We're going to come back with final questions in a moment. Well, next hour, Dr. Louis Turi joins us, the psychic, to talk about predictions for this year and next, and, of course, to talk about all kinds of things. Dr. Louis Turi in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. Our final segment with Jack Goldsmith as we talk about his work in Hoffa's shadow. Has Chucky read the book, Jack?
He has.
What did he think?
He has read it a couple of times. He had different reactions over different times, but he called me a few weeks ago and he told me he was actually in tears, and he said that he read it all. He thought it was amazing. He couldn't believe that I figured everything out. He was very grateful for everything I did. And he said he was sorry he was such a pain in the ass because he didn't always cooperate.
What kind of a stepfather was he?
Extraordinary. At a time when his life was falling apart and I was a vulnerable teenager who had never really had a father, he was just an extraordinary father. He gave me love and affection. He did everything for me and with me. And I really idolized him. And whatever accomplishments and success I've had in life, I'm sure wouldn't have happened but for those 5 years as a teenager.
Interesting. Is your mother still with you?
She is, yes, sir.
What does she think of the book?
She loves it, too. They weren't sure. They were worried about the publicity. They were worried about how it would be received. But they're both happy with it, I'm glad to say. I was worried, too.
What was your motivation, Jack, for writing it? I mean, was it a soul-cleansing thing? What was it?
A little bit. As we talked about earlier, I had wronged Chucky when I was a young man. And when I was older, we grew close again. In the course of the conversations we would have just as father and son, I came to think he might not have been guilty as charged since 1975. So finally one day I proposed to him that I write a book about his life and do my best to figure out what really happened. So I did it to help him, but really was a bit of an act of atonement. I was trying to make up for the pain I caused him for those 20 years.
Let's go to Mike, truck driving in Louisiana. Hi, Mike. Go ahead.
Hi, George. How you doing?
Wonderful. Thank you.
Jack, I'm going to have to get your book. I'm a former Teamster. I still drive for a union company. And, George, the Teamsters have several different pension funds. The one that's in trouble is called the Central States Fund.
Yes.
It's the one that, that Jack Kennedy mentioned in the tape. And what they're telling us now is that it's going to be completely empty by 2025.
Wow. Now, that used to be the big one, right?
That was the big one, yep. That was
the whole middle of the country out there. So you're talking about towns like Chicago, St. Louis, you know, Kansas City, Dallas. A lot of people are going to be hurting through there, but a lot of Teamsters won't be. They'll be okay. But I wanted to ask Jack if a Chicago lawyer named, I think his name was Edwin Steyer, was in his book.
No, sir, he's not. I don't know who that is.
Who was he? Who was he, Michael?
He was hired by James Hoffa to try to clean up the reputation of the Teamsters after they got thrown into receivership, and there was a big dust up and he got fired, and I think he came out with some stuff that might be something that you want to look into, Jack. And I think his name was Edwin Steyer. He's a Chicago lawyer, but I really like your book, and it sounds like I'm gonna have to get it. You know, I'm a former Teamster, but it's you know, being a Teamster is kind of like being a Marine. The brothership there is pretty strong even today. But I really appreciate this interview.
Thank you, Mike. And you keep driving. Drive safely, too. And we've got amazing respect, Jack, for truck drivers. They keep America going.
They keep America going, and the job is incredibly difficult. I mean, it's much, much less difficult now than back in Hoffa's day when he had to fight to get air conditioning and,
oh my God, yeah,
fight to get power steering. But it's a brutal, brutal job, and we all depend on it. And I've really come to appreciate truckers and how much they do for the country. Really.
And now they want to go to driverless trucks, for crying out loud.
That's going to be the first, I think, in the driverless wave. I think trucks will come before cars.
We go now to the Green Hornet, truck driving in Kansas. Hello there, Green Hornet.
Hello. Three things. One, my dad told stories back in the 70s that when he bought one of the first extend-a-hole backhoes that reached out further than a normal one, that he dug for like 2 or 3 days in the Irish Hills area because the FBI come to the door asking him to dig looking for Hoffa, which was never found. Obviously.
Right.
Then my wife's grandfather, just before he died a couple years ago, him and me was sitting down, and he was involved with the mob. It was well known in the family that he was. He was a bigwig at GM. He told me a story, and it kind of ended there. It couldn't get no more out of him, that a good friend of his had dinner the night before with Hoffa before he disappeared. Then the third thing is I worked construction, and a lot of guys, a lot of the old-timers, I've got this confirmed. I have a lot of people that they think he's buried in the Civic Center in Detroit.
Because it was I heard that, too. That time. Yeah, I heard that, too. Thank you, Green Hornet. Appreciate that. There are so many rumors, Jack, about where Hoffa was dumped, buried, ground up, you know, burned, incinerated, you know, put in a cremation center.
Yep.
All kinds of things.
Yep, they're just endless. I mean, I couldn't include them all in the book, but there are a lot of them, and some of them are very imaginative.
Well, next up, we go to Neil, truck driving in the state of Washington. Neil, welcome to the show, sir.
Good evening, George. Jack, nice to talk to you guys.
You too.
I am currently working as a Teamster. I work for a grinding crew. We're up grinding the Thomas and Quality Pass, moving the breakneck speed at 28 feet per minute. And I just wanted to also let you know that I'm sure you're very well aware of it, but maybe some of the listeners aren't. The unions have diversified so much in the last few years. We represent warehousemen. We represent lawyers, we represent city personnel, we represent nurses, dental assistants, and it goes on and on.
That's interesting. I think they needed to do that in order to survive, Jack, didn't they?
They did, but actually Hoffa started that. The Teamsters were traditionally just truckers and warehouse workers.
That's right.
He believes strongly that they shouldn't be limited by those so-called jurisdictional limits, and his philosophy was if it moves, organize it. And he really was the one that started expanding the Teamsters to all these other fields, and it's continued.
Whatever happened to the FFL-CIO? I don't hear much about them anymore.
I mean, they still exist, obviously. They don't have great leadership. They certainly...
They used to have George Meany. Remember that name?
I do. Yes, I do remember George Meany. I talked about him a little bit in the book. But... They, the FL-CIO, I'm not a real expert on their fate, but they, like the rest of labor, are pretty much in the doldrums. They've lost the bargaining power they had for a whole bunch of reasons. They've lost the drive and organization that they had. They've got global competition now, which makes it much harder than before to keep jobs here. So private sector unions face a whole host of problems.
Ken in Fort Worth, Texas, welcome to the program. First-time caller. Hi, Ken. Are you there? Nope, the first-time caller has disappeared. Let's go next to Annie in Alabama. Go ahead, Annie.
Thank you, George, for taking my call.
Thank you.
Mr. Goldstein, I know this sounds very elementary, but do you think that someone might have killed Jimmy Hoffa just because they were against the union?
I don't think that they killed Hoffa because they were against the union. I think that they killed Hoffa because he was trying to take over the union and he was going to expose the mobs gorging on union funds.
Yep.
I don't think the other reason makes much sense. No, ma'am, I don't.
A lot of money must have been going by. I wonder how big that Central States Fund was during those days, Jack. Do you know?
I don't know the answer to that question. I might have known that at one time, but I don't know. It had a lot of money, and it was doling out a lot of loans, and again, as I said earlier, Hoffa would put up brakes on it, but Simmons turned it over and just let them do what they wanted with it, and he was off playing golf and enjoying himself.
Well, you know, I think Hoffa got to the point where he said, I'm going to lend you this money. You could never get this kind of money from a bank, but I want to make money on this thing. We want X percent for the fund, and I'm sure he made money himself. But the fund itself made a pretty good investment on that.
It did. By all accounts, it did.
Let's go to Jersey Doug in New Jersey. Hey, Doug, go ahead.
Yes, good evening, George. How are you?
Great, Doug. Thank you.
Glad to hear it. And your guest, fantastic. What I wanted to say is earlier when you had played that clip of Hoffa and Kennedy going back and forth there.
Yeah.
When Hoffa said he made a point of saying that some people do bad things, and when they get older, they change their ways. And people that did bad doesn't necessarily mean they're still doing bad. Now, what he was saying was covering his backside by saying we as in the mafia, as if they, you know, the ones that were still involved, they were all clean and everything as far as the union went. But I think more of that was him saying it about himself, because he honestly did feel like he did want to go straight and be able to go ahead and run the union and take care of the union workers the way they should be, without having the mafia and everybody else having a finger in the pie. And
no doubt about that, Doug. I think that's part of it. When did Hoffa go to prison, Jack?
1967.
67.
March of 1967.
That clip from the hearing was 57, so it took them 10 years to get him.
Yeah.
But they were relentless. They never gave up.
It was not only did they never give up, Bobby Kennedy, both in the Senate and when he became Attorney General, he cut every corner that he could to get Hoffa. I mean, it was really a vendetta. He used all of the resources of the Justice Department and of his friends in the press to really do an all-court press to bring Hoffa down. And Hoffa committed his own mistakes. I mean, he was eventually went down for tampering with a jury. But it took a long time and a lot of resources, but they finally got him.
It was the Nixon White House that got him paroled. What kind of deal was cut there?
Well, I talk about this in the book. So that's a really interesting chapter, because if you think Watergate was something, the machinations that went involved, that were involved in cutting a deal to get Hoffa out of prison in a way that kept Fitzsimmons, the Nixon crony, in power, it was quite something. And also, basically, Hoffa himself, out of his personal funds, gave Nixon $1 million, I'm pretty sure. And I talk about the evidence for that in the book. But there were a lot of machinations and some amazing things I found in the Nixon archives about all the doings to basically get off out of jail so that the pressure would be off of Nixon and Fitzsimmons, but also to keep him out of labor.
That's a good point. And, of course, Nixon needed the middle-class vote, didn't he?
Oh, yes. He was the first thing he did after he won the election in 68 was he decided that he really, even though he had been anti-labor all of his life, he was, as part of the silent majority, he went after workers, and he was closer to the Teamsters Union than any other union. He had very, very good relationships with Fitzsimmons. Fitzsimmons basically got him a lot of money, supported him. And so Nixon, it was part of his strategy for 72, definitely, to win over the Teamsters Union, and he succeeded. He succeeded, and it helped him a lot.
What happened between Fitzsimmons and Hoffa where Hoffa really didn't like him anymore?
Hoffa went to jail in 67, in 1967. He was the one that put Fitzsimmons in charge.
Right, he picked him.
He picked him, and he had known Fitzsimmons for decades, and Fitzsimmons had been a pliant underling, and Hoffa assumed he would continue to be. Hoffa also mistakenly assumed he wasn't going to spend much time in prison. He thought he was just going to spend a few months there, so he didn't worry much about Fitzsimmons being there. And after a while, what happened was, when Hoffa spent more and more time in jail, Fitz started to like being the president of the Teamsters. He liked the perks. He thought he was doing a pretty good job. And basically, Fitz stopped listening to Hoffa, which drove Hoffa crazy. Fitz turned the union over to the mob and to others, and he just lived off the perks. He went to the Nixon White House. And this just absolutely drove Hoffa crazy, because he thought Fitzsimmons double-crossed him and was ruining the union.
Fitzsimmons started to really like the power, didn't he?
He loved it. He loved that he had a private airplane that could take him to play golf anywhere. He loved putting on his tuxedo and going to the Nixon White House. Chuck Colson was the person that Nixon charged with keeping Fitzsimmons happy, and he gave him lots of access to Nixon. The Nixon tapes that I uncovered and talked about in the book have lots of great, hilarious conversations between Fitzsimmons and Colson and Nixon. They really did a snow job on him, and he loved it.
Let's grab one quick call. John in Hollywood, Florida. I only have a minute for you, John. Go ahead.
Yeah, how you doing? How you guys doing tonight?
Good.
I just wanted to say that the Sun set the Teamster Pension Fund up for failure. He let UPS borrow the pension fund, and then, that's why it's going to go broke. And everything his dad fought for, he's given back.
UPS? UPS borrowed? Jeez.
You know, he let UPS pull out of our pension fund. And there's only like 3 or 4 carriers left in the pension fund. So they're paying out for the other carriers that used to be in the fund, and it's going broke.
Yeah, it is going broke. There's no doubt about that.
UPS pull out, and they said they lost the money when the market took it down, went down 10 years ago in the 90s with the houses.
We needed that old mafia Las Vegas investment, Jack, to make this money back.
Well, I don't know. I don't think that's going to happen again, unfortunately, for the Teamsters Pension Fund.
Plus, Vegas has been pretty cleaned up with corporations now.
It appears to be. I mean, it's certainly
times
much,
have changed.
Much heavier regulated.
Absolutely. Jack, I want to thank you for being on the program. Would you give out your website for people?
It's, well, there's two websites. InHoffaShadow.com is where you can find out about the book, and I'm at JackGoldsmith.org.
Super. Thank you, Jack. It's great talking to somebody who knows so much about the case. Keep in touch. Jack Goldsmith, we will be back in a moment with psychic Dr. Lewis Turry on Coast to Coast AM.